In the blood-soaked aftermath of the Battle of Sekigahara in 1600, two young men find themselves on the losing side of history. 17-year-old Shinmen Takezo stands apart from everyone around him, wild-eyed, fierce, with an almost animal-like quality that both terrifies and fascinates. Unlike his childhood friend Matahachi, who seeks comfort and safety, Takezo seems energized by danger, fighting with raw instinct rather than technique. "We have to make names for ourselves," he declares, his ambition burning even in their desperate circumstances. The Japan we encounter is in violent transition, a countryside littered with corpses, abandoned weapons, and desperate survivors. Through Takezo's eyes, we experience a world where traditional power structures have collapsed, creating a vacuum where only strength determines survival. His ferocity isn't mere bloodlust, but a primitive form of honesty. He simply hasn't learned to disguise his nature behind the veneer of civilization that others wear so comfortably. What makes Takezo's character so compelling is this fundamental question. In a world defined by violence, what separates a beast from a warrior? As we watch him navigate this brutal landscape, we begin to understand that beneath his savage exterior lies something extraordinary waiting to be shaped. Wounded and desperate, Takezo and Matahachi find apparent salvation when two women, Oko, calculating and worldly, and the younger, more innocent, Akemi, offer them shelter and care. This mercy masks a darker truth. The women survive by stripping valuables from dead soldiers. These women have adapted to war's brutality, using manipulation and sexuality instead of force, a stark contrast to Takezo's direct approach. The relationship between Matahachi and Oko reveals fundamental differences between the friends. Matahachi quickly falls under Oko's spell, while Takezo remains aloof and suspicious. This section introduces a crucial theme, the survival masks people wear. Oko and Akemi present themselves as charitable rescuers while hiding their identities as battlefield scavengers. Matahachi begins abandoning his loyalty to his fiancée Otsu. Only Takezo seems incapable of such pretense. His nature remains transparent, for better or worse. When the Tsujikaze gang arrives, Takezo transforms from a sullen youth into something terrifying, moving with inhuman speed and striking with deadly precision. "He's like a demon," one gang member gasps as Takezo cuts down multiple opponents, including their leader. This moment redefines him as something supernatural. The fear he inspires protects him while further isolating him from human connection. Matahachi reacts with a mixture of awe and inadequacy. "I could never be like that," he realizes, simultaneously relieved and ashamed. This crystallizes their diverging paths, Matahachi recognizing his limitations while Takezo remains unaware of his exceptional nature. Afterward, both make defining choices. Matahachi stays with Oko, abandoning his fiancé and obligations, seeking escape from his former identity. Takezo chooses the harder path, returning to their village alone, despite knowing he'll be treated as a criminal, showing an instinctive integrity that contrasts with his savage reputation. Takezo's return reveals his deeply embedded reputation as a troublemaker. The moment he appears, he's immediately branded an outlaw, requiring containment. Hanaden Osugi, Matahachi's mother, emerges as a fierce antagonist, transforming grief over her son's presumed death into hatred for Takezo. "You've always been a demon child," she spits, indicating his negative reputation predates the battle. She personifies the village's unforgiving collective judgment. The power lies in contrasting external perception with Takezo's interior life. The village sees only the demon child needing restraint, missing the young man who returned to face consequences rather than flee. The village-wide manhunt takes on ritual qualities, showing how threatening individualism was in feudal Japan. Takezo's true crime isn't violence, but his refusal to conform. Otsu's confrontation adds emotional depth. Her rage turns to betrayal when Teikzo reveals the truth. Madahachi lives but chose another woman. This moment showcases Teikzo's character, socially graceless yet possessing an instinctive integrity that prevents him from lying even when advantageous. As news of Takazo's return spreads, the village becomes a hunting ground with him as prey. Authorities mobilize every villager, creating a human net to trap the wild beast they fear, not just for his strength, but for his threatening individualism in their conformist society. The manhunt reveals Takazo moving with animal-like instinct, using terrain and natural cover expertly. This paradox defines him. His uncivilized nature provides survival advantages his civilized pursuers lack. He reads the landscape and anticipates their movements with uncanny precision. When cornered, Takazo recognizes his capacity for violence. I could kill them all. Yet something holds him back, not fear of consequences, but a dawning sense that such actions would only confirm what others believe about him. Ironically, the villagers employ tactics they condemn in Takazo, setting traps, using deception, and overwhelming force. This hypocrisy doesn't escape characters like Otsu, who questions the justice of the pursuit while remaining conflicted. Flashbacks to Takazo's childhood provide context. Raised amid violence and rejection, systematic exclusion transformed him into something demon-like. When capture seems inevitable, an eccentric Buddhist monk appears, recognizing potential in Takazo that others miss. He sees both danger and nobility in Takazo's nature. A wild tiger cub is still a tiger. Unlike villagers who want to destroy Takazo, the monk perceives raw material for something extraordinary. Their initial interactions reveal mutual incomprehension. Takazo, accustomed to force, cannot grasp the monk's philosophical approach. The monk must reach someone with almost no capacity for introspection. His methods seem like madness to observers. He neither condemns nor condones Takazo's violence, but creates situations forcing Takazo to confront his limitations. A sword that only cuts down others will eventually cut down its wielder, he suggests, planting seeds that will transform Takazo into Musashi. For perhaps the first time, Takazo encounters someone who neither fears nor wishes to use him, someone who truly sees him. This experience of being genuinely seen creates the possibility for change, suggesting transformation begins with acceptance. As the first volume closes, we glimpse how Shinmen Takazo might eventually become Miyamoto Musashi. Though still primarily reactive and instinctual, moments of reflection emerge. Questions about purpose beyond survival, the meaning of strength, and what it means to follow a path. In a pivotal moment, Takazo reveals his ambition to become Japan's strongest swordsman. This declaration marks his first step toward living with intention rather than merely existing in perpetual reaction, fighting when attacked, running when pursued, surviving day to day. Takazo's evolution won't require suppressing his nature, but refining it. His ferocity, instinctive reading of opponents, and uncommon courage, qualities that currently make him dangerous, will become the foundation of his mastery when combined with discipline and purpose. The volume ends with Takazo's capture seemingly inevitable. This apparent defeat contains the possibility of transformation. Only by reaching the limits of his current approach can he become open to a different path. The wild beast carries within him the seeds of the philosophical warrior. His journey has only just begun.